We're holding the last word of your Dalit Amid Beis, continuing on the topic of how a Korban Mincha is brought. We went through so far most of the stages of it up to, we left off with after the Kmitza is done, they take the Levoina, which previously was scattered all over the Mincha and then was moved over to one side, and then the Kohen collects all of it and puts it on top of the Kohenets. So the Braisa continued, Uma'alehu, Uma'tire b'chli shoris. He brings it up to the Mizbeach and burns it on the Mizbeach in a chli shoris. So the Gemara asks, b'chli shoris maktule? What do you mean? Does he burn it in a chli shoris? You don't burn it in a chli shoris. You take it out of the chli shoris and put it on the fire. Rashi has a different girsa over here, and it's interesting. Usually the printers change the girsa in the Kisvei Yad and eventually in the printed editions to match what Rashi says, but this is one of those rare cases where they didn't. Rashi's girsa is that the Gemara is asking, what do you mean that he's already burning it? The Braisa only afterwards mentions, only the next thing in the Braisa is that he salts it. And we know you have to salt every korban before you offer it. So how can we say that he's already offering it if we haven't gotten up to the point of him salting it yet? So the answer is, rather, what the Braisa means is you bring it up in a klisharis in order to burn it, but you're not actually burning it yet, because either, according to Rashi's girsa, you salt it first, and according to the girsa we have in front of us, you take it out of the klisharis first. The next thing was, then you salt the koimetz and you put it on the fire. Because the pasuk says all of your korbanos mincha have to be salted, so it doesn't mean the korban as a whole. It means the koimetz, which is going to be burnt on the mizbeach, has to be salted. By the way, the braisa is not mentioning over here, but the pasuk tells us, and the Gemara deals with it elsewhere, that a mincha brought by a kohen, the entire thing is burnt on the mizbeach. You don't take a koimetz of it and salt only that koimetz and burn it. In the case of a kohen's mincha, you burn the entire thing. Anyway, continued the braisa. Korav a koimetz shiareh nechalin. Once the koimetz has been offered, then the remainder of the mincha can be eaten. So the Gemara says, Menolon, where do we know that from? So Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, V'hichter ha-Koyen es Azkarosa, the Pasuk says that the Koyen should offer the Azkara, which means the remembrance portion of it, the part that makes the Korban remembered and accepted by Hashem, the Gomer, and then Uksiv, and then only then does the next Pasuk continue, V'aneseres min ha-Mincha la'Aaron l'banav, what's left of the Mincha goes to Aaron and to his son, the Koyen. So only after the koimetz is brought, only then can the mincha be eaten. This is similar to the way it is with korbanos, where only after the blood is sprinkled and the imurim are offered on the mizbeach, only then can the koyanim or the owners eat the meat of it. And the Gemara continues, l'mayuk de islay or l'mayuk de islay. Now within that, you have a machloikas amiroyim. What exactly? What stage of offering the koimetz makes the shirayim mutter to eat? That you have a machloikas about it in Menachos de Itvar, because we have a discussion about that in the Gemara Menachos. A koimetz me'emesei matir. What has to happen to the koimetz for the koyanim to be able to eat the shirayim? Rav Chanina Omar Mishatishlet Boyahur. Rav Chanina says as soon as the fire starts grabbing onto it, so even though most of it is not burnt yet, but as long as the fire is already grabbed onto part of the koimetz, then already you're allowed to eat the shirayim. Rav Yechanan Omar Mishatitza Se'ur Beruba, and Rav Yechanan says only once the fire has caught on to most of the koimetz. So the Braisa is not taking a stand on that. The Braisa is just saying once the koimetz is offered, and Rav Chanina will understand it his way, and Rav Yochanan will understand it his way. Okay. We continued in the Braisa, but Ashoin Akoinim Litten Lasoika Yain Vashemin Udvash. We said the Koinim are allowed to put into the remainder of the Mincha. And by the way, it's not just one Koin. The rule is the Torah implies in various, the Torah says in various psukim that any Koin who's roi to eat kodshim is able to eat from that Mincha. So what it actually means is that all the Koinim of that day's base of who are capable of eating a korban, who are not tamei or what have you, join in with it. Which means even if it's a small korban, it means every person is only going to get a tiny little bit of it. Nevertheless, that's the way it is. Rashi explains on the psukim from various gemaras that they've done a lot. They can't trade it off. They can't say, for example, each one is going to say, well, if we divide up every single mincha, each of us is only going to get a tiny little bit of it. So instead, let's make a deal. You'll get this whole mincha, and I'll get that whole mincha. Doesn't work that way. Every single individual mincha has to be divided up among all the koyanim of that day. Anyway. So we said the koyanim are allowed to put wine or oil or honey into their part of the korban. So the Gemara asks, my timer. Now, why is that mutter? After all, we know the Torah tells us, we say every day in davening, you can't put honey in anything that's offered on the Mizbeach. And the Gemara is going to mention this in a minute that the fact is that the mincha, most menachas cannot be chometz, and the kohenim, and that's true not only of the part of the Mizbeach that goes on the Mizbeach, but even the part that the kohenim eat. So why should it be any different with honey? Why should we say that chometz is not allowed for either one, but honey is only not allowed on the Mizbeach, but is allowed in the part that they eat? So the answer is amakra l'moshcha, because on the other hand, the pasuk says about the eating of korbanos that it has to be l'moshcha, which means for greatness. Literally, l'moshcha means for anointing, because the kohenim are anointed. But Rashi explains on the pasuk over there, and the Gemara explains over here that l'moshcha means l'gdula. It means for greatness. In other words, that the korbanos should be eaten in a way of greatness, in a way of nobility, in a way like kings would eat. Kederach shamalachim oichlin, the way that kings eat, and kings don't just eat their food plain; they season it with honey or oil or other things like that. And therefore, the kohenim, when they're eating their portion of the mincha, are also allowed to do that. On the other hand, the Braisa continued, Ve'ein asur en elam l'chametz. They're also only from making their part of the mincha chametz. That, dichtiv, voice to offer chametz chelkam. The Pasuk says, in Parashat Tzav, there should not be baked chametz their portion. Now, the simple meaning of the Pasuk is, since you have, in the Pasuk, you have a zokif katan, which is a strong separating truck, on the word chametz, so the simple meaning of the pasuk is that chelkam belongs to the next part of the pasuk. Lo yiseof chametz, it, the korban mincha, should not be baked as chametz. Chelkam nasati oisam meishai, I have given the kohenim their portion of it from my fires to eat. But however, the Gemara Darshins, because of the way it says chametz, and then right after that it says the word chelkam, therefore the Gemara Darshins, as though it was one long part of the sentence, we learn from that even their portion of the mincha cannot be baked as chametz. So they are allowed to put in oil or honey or what have you, like we said before, but they're still not allowed to make their portion of the mincha chametz. So that goes through, so now we've gone through the entire Braisa, and now we understand more about how the way of Korban Mincha is brought and how the Kohenim eventually eat it. Okay, getting back now to our Mishnah, we said in the Mishnah that there's a difference between the Mincha Soita and all the other Menachos. The Mishnah had said that all other menachas require shemen and require oil and lavona, and as opposed to the soita's korban, which has neither one, and all other menachas come from wheat, with the exception of this one that comes from barley flour. And then the Mishnah had said another exception that comes from barley flour is the Minchas Ha'omer, but the difference is the Minchas Ha'omer is made from good quality barley flour, which is called geres, whereas this one is made from plain flour, which is called kemach. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, what do you mean all other menachas require oil on the vine? Well, it's a Minchas Choyte. What about the mincha of a chote? Now you have where most averas a person does, they bring a chatas of an animal, and that's that. It doesn't depend on whether they're rich or poor. If they're poor, they're just going to have to save up the money till they can afford it. There's a few mitzvahs where there's a few things that a person might be over on, where the Torah tells us instead they bring a korban ola b'yodin, an adjustable value korban. So if they're rich, they bring an animal. If they're poorer, then they bring two birds. One is an ola, one is a hatas. And if they're even poorer than that, dalei dalus, as they call it, then the person brings a korban mincha. And the pasuk says such a mincha does not have oil or levoina in it. So what are you telling me in our Mishnah that all other menachas require oil and levoina when you see that also a minchas chote doesn't? And the pasuk says, well, yosim alei hashemen v'leitin alei levoina. The answer is hachi karma. You're right. The Mishnah doesn't mean that every single other one does. What it means is though, kol menachas tounes shemen levoina uvois menachitin uvois sodas. What it means is the Mishnah had mentioned two different things. First, it said that all menachas require oil and levoina. Then, as opposed to the minchas soita, then it said that all other menachas come from wheat, with the exception of this one that comes from barley. So you have to kind of combine those two things together to understand what the Mishnah is meaning. In other words, the Mishnah is saying, kol menachas tounes shemen levoina uvois menachitin uvois sodas. All other menachas require shemen levoina, and also all other menachas come from wheat. And come from slowness. So you have, in other words, four advantages that most korbanos mincha have over the mincha sota. On the other hand, the Mishnah is continuing, mincha sota, afa pisha ena tuna shemen levoina. It is true that the mincha sota doesn't require oil on levoina, and in fact, you're not allowed to put them in it. Nevertheless, at least ba minachitin uva sodas. At least it does have the other two advantages that it comes from wheat and it comes from slowness, which is fine flour. So you kind of combine all of them together. The Mishnah is telling us that and the Mishnah continues, Mincha Sa'omer, Afapishi, Bar Minasa'odin, the Mincha Sa'omer, even though it's missing one of those advantages because it comes from barley rather than wheat, nevertheless, it has all the other three, Tona Shemin Levona of Argenis. It requires Shemin and Levona, and it comes as fine flour. The zoo, but the one of the soita is missing all four of those. Ainat to own a loy shemen of a levoina, or vamin a sa'un of a kemach. In other words, what you have to do, you have to combine together the two clauses of the Mishnah, and you're saying like this, there is no other mincha other than the mincha soita that is lacking all four of these things. Most menachas have all four of them. The minchas chote is missing two of them because it's missing shemen and levoina, but it has the other two, being wheat flour and being solus, which is fine flour. The minchas ha'omer is the other way around. It's missing one advantage because it comes from barley rather than wheat, but it has the other three. The minchas sota is unique that it's missing all four of those. So therefore, when the Mishnah says kol ha'menachas, you can actually say it does actually mean every other mincha, because every other mincha, it's true, doesn't have all four of those things, but every other mincha has at least some of them. Okay. The Gemara says, Tanya, Omer of Shimon, the din hu shtehem minchas chote to'una shemen olavoyin. Really, by rights, by logic, this mincha that we're saying that a person brings for certain averus, not the soita we're saying, but the other one that's done for certain averus, was bitui, or entering the Beis Mikdash, or eating korbanos when a person is tomei and didn't realize a couple of those. So really, by rights, Rav Shimon says, to'una shemen levoina. Really, by logically, you would think that it should require oil on levoina, shelo yehei chote nisker, because you don't want the sinner should gain. Why should it be that he gets to bring such a cheap mincha more than most other menachos, and he doesn't have to bring oil on levoina, which after all costs money. So why indeed does it not require oil or levoina? The reason is shelo yehei korbanin mehudar, because Hashem doesn't want that his korban should be that beautiful. Since he's bringing it for an avera, then therefore Hashem wants it to be a plainer kind of korban. So and continues Rav Shimon, he was another example of this kind of thing. Rav Shimon says, consider a regular chatas. Now, a regular chatas is called chatas chelev because among the things there are actually 43 different averas for which a person might bring a regular chatas. Not 43. There's a little bit less, but because a couple of them are there's 43 things for which a person is chay of kares. Most of those a person would bring a chatas for, but you have a couple of exceptions. They include the Pesach and failing to bring the korban Pesach and failing to have a bris milah, which are mitzvahs aseh. There's no korban for that. There's a couple of them that instead it's a korban over yodid, but you have 30 odd avenus where a person brings a regular chatas. So now Reb Shimon is saying, we call it chatas chelev because a typical, Rashi over here explains, because the Pasuk says you're not allowed to eat chelev, and right after that it starts talking about the dinim of a chatas. So even though, of course, there are several dozen other cases where a person would bring a chatas, but still we call it chatas chelev because of that. In other places, it actually explains that also the reason is because eating chelev is a fairly common kind of thing that a person might do that makes them chayav chatas. Most of the other things that a person would be chayav chatas for are much rarer, or things he's likely to do much more rarely. Anyway, so a chatas chelev, a regular chatas, by rights, it ought to be t'una nesachim. By rights, it ought to be chayev in nesachim. Meaning, now we have like this: when you bring certain korbanos, you bring an ola or a shlomim or a toida or a couple of other kinds of korbanos, you have to bring with them nesachim, flour and oil for a mincha, and wine for an men wine. And the flour and oil are burnt on the mizbeach, and the wine is poured on the mizbeach. So usually the rule is, Tosfos points out, the rule is usually any korban that can be brought voluntarily is the kind that requires nesachim. So an ola or a shlomim or a toida can be brought voluntarily, and therefore you bring nesachim to them. Reb Shimon is saying, by rights, you would have thought the logic that a regular chatas should also be chay of that, even though Tosfos explains it's not brought b'nedo in a dava. Given that, after all, the Torah is penalizing him and requiring him to bring a korban, so you would think that maybe the Torah should penalize him extra and require him to spend money on the nesachim as well. So why not? So again, shalo yahi chote nisker, and the logic would be, again, we don't want the sinner to gain by it, that he shouldn't have to bring something extra. But with name ma in etona, why indeed does a chatas chelev not require nesachim? Same idea, shlo yehi korban mehuder, so that the korban isn't so beautiful. Avol chatosei shel metzora. On the other hand, when it comes to the chatas of the metzora from this week's parasha, va'ashamay, and also the oshem of the metzora to unin nesachim, those actually do require nesachim. Lefisha ein boin al chet, because the korbanos of metzora are not coming because of an avera. The Gemara is going to ask in a second. Saras comes because of avera, but we actually learn in this week's parasha. It says when the mitzvah brings his korbanos, so then the Torah tells us there's a difference between rich and poor. If he's rich, he brings three animals as korbanos. If he's poor, he brings two birds instead and one animal. Whatever the case, the Torah mentions that he has to bring nesachim together with them, and the Gemara in Menachos explains how we know that those nesachim belong to the actual korban itself. So he's bringing an ola. He has to bring the sochim with the ola anyhow. That the Torah doesn't need to tell us, because we have other psukim that tell us that an ola requires the sochim. But we learn from the psukim from the psukim over there, and also from psukim in Parshas Shlach, where it talks about the sochim in general, that the chatas and the osham of the mitzvah also require the sochim with them. So a rare example where you have a korban that's not brought the neder and a dava and still requires the sochim. The Mishnah in Shkolim tells us, by the way, that they had a system in the Beis Mikdash for Nesachim. You couldn't just have that any person brings Nesachim from his house, because they may not have been prepared according to the standards of Tara that the Beis Mikdash requires. So instead, they set up a system where you would buy your Nesachim from the Beis Mikdash. You would go to a particular official of the Beis Mikdash and buy from him a voucher or a token for your for the type of nesachim that you needed, and then you would uh, and um and then you would go to another office of the Beis Mikdash and redeem that voucher and get the actual Nesachim. And then bring them along with your korban. So the Mishnah mentions over there that they had different tokens, and one specifically, you have different opinions in the Mishnah over there. One opinion is they had one specific token for a mitzvah, and another one, they called it choite, in the sense that, as the Gemara is going to say now, a mitzvah, after all, has done some kind of avera in order to get tzaras. And then the Mishnah brings there another opinion that they had two, one for a rich mitzvah and one for a poor one, because of the, again, the rich mitzvah being that he's bringing more animals as a korban, he needs more nesachim. Anyway, the point is, Rav Shimon is saying, even though you're saying that usually a chatas or an osham for that matter don't come accompanied by nesachim, because we're saying we don't want the sitter's korban to be beautiful, but by a mitzvah it's different because his korban is not really coming because of an aveda. So the Gemara says, Eini, is that so? What do you mean it's not coming because of an aveda? Well, Amrav Shmuel Manachmeni Amrav Yonason Al Shiva Dvarim Negoyim Bayin Chola. We say that there are seven avedas for which a person can get saras, and the Gemara in Erchin lists all of them. Most famously, we know, of course, Lashon Hara, but the Gemara mentions over there a few other ones as well. There's a couple of different midrashim, also Medrash Rabbah and Medrash Tanchuma, that add a couple of extra. Anyway, the point is that yes, saras, generally speaking, comes because of an aveda. The answer is essentially having the nega itself, having the tzaras itself, accomplish the kapara for his aveno. So whether it was lashon hara or whether it was gasas or ruach, pride or gezel or various other things, whatever it is, the suffering and the humiliation and everything that he went through with tzaras, that is actually being mechaper for that was mechaper for the particular aveira that he did. Ki maisi korban. Now, when he's bringing a korban, it's really only lishdruya bekodshim or to kamaisi. He's really only bringing it in order to be mutter to eat kodshim or to enter the Beis Mikdash, for that matter. There are certain factors. There are certain kinds of tumas that are where we say that part of the process of the person becoming tahor is that he has to bring a korban, and it's not that he's a mechusa kapara. All of them are in this week's parasha. There's a yeledes at the beginning of this week's parasha. There's the mitzora, which is the bulk of the parasha, and then there's the zav and zava at the end of it. So all of those, the torah, for reasons that Hashem decided that a person has to bring a korban in those cases. But the korban is not really the korban is not really accomplishing the main kapara. For what they did, the main kapara has been accomplished by the yisurim and everything that they suffered. So therefore, you can well say that the korban of a mitzvah does not really come for chet. Although, again, it is true that that Mishnah in Shkolim that we were just talking about does say that the token for the mitzvah was inscribed with the word choyte on it to remind him that, after all, he had done an avera, and he has to not only just rely on the yisurim, but actually do tshuva and not do this again. Okay. So that explains why the chatas and the osham of mitzvah require nesachim, where generally a chatas or an osham doesn't. The Gemara asks, Elameata, well, by that logic then, if you're telling me that whenever a chatas comes not for an avera, then it should require nesachim, and you're saying in the case of a mitzora that's exactly what happens. Well, Elameata, chatas nazir teitun nesachim. By that logic, the chatas that a nazir brings should require nesachim. Lefisha ain't a ba'achet, because again, the chatas of a nazir is not basically coming for an avera. So why taka doesn't his chatas require nesachim? And the answer is savalak Rav Elazar akaka. The answer is Rav Shimon in this regard, when Rav Shimon is the one who's been explaining this whole thing of why it is that some korbanos require nesachim and some not. He holds like Rav Elazar akaka. Dama nazir nami choytehu. He says that as we had a number of times in Masechta Nazir, that he holds that a nazir is in fact also considered a sinner because he deprived himself of wine. So therefore we can say that the chatas of a nazir does come in connection with an aveda. Tosfos discusses, first of all, first Tosfos has a long discussion. This statement of Rav Elazar HaKapper, is it referring only to a Nazir who became Tomei, or are we also talking about a Nazir that who finishes his Nazirah successfully as a Nazir Tahir? There are other Gemaras. We learned a Nazir that Rabbi Elazar HaKapo seems to be referring only to a Nazir Tomei. On the other hand, from our Gemara over here, it seems to imply that we are in fact talking about a Nazir Tahir as well. So Rabbi Elazar HaKapo would say, even a Nazir Tahir is a Chote because he deprived himself of wine. If he's a Nazir Tameh, then he's also a Chote for a different reason, because now because now he's repeating over. First of all, he became Tameh, which was careless of him, and second of all, he has to start his Nazirus all over again. So Torah just discusses at some length over here the ins and outs of that. Of which one it is that's considered the chote, so maybe we could say, on the other hand, that maybe being a Nazir Tahir is not really considered such a tsar, and therefore this concept of his would apply only to a Nazir Tahir. On the other hand, Tosfos begins by saying that we have to be talking about a Nazir Tahir on the face of it, because a Nazir Tahir brings, as we learned in Masechta Nazir, his chatos is a bird chatos, and bird never required nesachim in the first place. So therefore, on the face of it, we have to be talking about here about a Nazir Tahir. So Tosfos goes back and forth on that point. Also, Tosfos mentions that Rav Shimon himself holds of this concept. He also said that the Nazir is considered a Chote. So why do we have to say Rav Shimon holds like Rav Elazar HaKapo? We could just say Rav Shimon goes according to his own Shita. And the reason is, Tosfos says, because throughout Shas, whenever it brings this concept that a Nazir is a Chote, it always brings it in the name of Rav Elazar HaKapo. So here also the Gemara is saying Rav Shimon holds like Rav Elazar HaKapo, even though the Gemara could have just as well said that Rav Shimon goes according to his own Shita. Tosfos Shantz points out one more thing in this regard. Now, what about then, in that case, by a Nazir, you have not only a Chatos, but also an Osham. So why is the Gemara mentioning only the Chatos and not bringing up the Osham as well? So Tosfos Shantz says, because the fact is, really, the Osham of the Nazir, As the Osham of the Nazir is not really coming for any particular purpose. It's a Gzeres HaKosu that a Nazir has to bring an Osham, a Nazir Tomei, that is, has to bring an Osham. But the fact is, it's not really coming for any chet either. It's coming, the Gemara elsewhere, the Gemara in Krisis calls it Levatola. It's almost like it's coming for nothing. Mr. Torah, Gzeres HaKosu, that a Nazir has to bring an Osham. There's not really a particular Aveira that we should say that he should have to bring an Osham for. So therefore, that's the Gemara assumes that being the case, then Taka, there's no logic that it should require Nesachim. And therefore, the Gemara was asking only from the chet. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rav Gamliel Omer Kishen Fula. Rav Gamliel had said that the reason why the Sotah's Mincha comes from barley flour. So he said the reason is because she acted like an animal, which is promiscuous, and therefore she brings an animal's coat. So the Mishnah had said, Rav Gamliel Omer Kishen Fula. So Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Omer Lahen Rav Gamliel HaChamim, Sofrim. And Rav Gamliel says to the Chacham of his generation, Sofrim, the scribes. Now, Sofrim literally means scribes. It means people who write, for example, Sifrei Torah and whatever for a living. More generally, the word Sofrim sometimes means the early Chachamim. But here, actually, Rav Yaakov Emden points out that we never find anybody from Rav Gamliel's generation using the word Sofrim to describe his contemporary Chachamim. The Gemara elsewhere says that the Rishonim, the earlier Chachamim, from the time of the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah, or thereabouts, are called Sofrim because Shoyu Sofrim called Osias Shavat Torah. They used to count up all the letters in the Torah to make sure that everything is accurate. And elsewhere, the Gemara or the Medrash mentions also that they would count up all the different things that we have throughout Shas, that there are 39 Ovis Malachas, or 36 things for which a person is Chayav Kares, and so on and so forth. All those enumerations were done by the Sofrim, but you don't have that already in Gamliel's times. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden explains, since the Gemara is going to say that he's reacting to what Reb Meir said. We find in a few places in Chas that Reb Meir was a sofer, therefore he uses the word sofer. Anyway, Reb Gamliel says, Hanichu li, leave me alone, ve'ed reshena k'min choymer, and I will darshan this thing of why a sota brings a cover of barley flour like a choymer. Rashi explains, Rashi translates the word choymer with the word but. So we mean a nice, and Rashi describes it, it's a golden button or a golden clasp or something like that, that's used, for example, to close up the neck, that's used to close up the neckline of a shirt. So you might have, a shirt has a hole to put it over your head. The front of the shirt might be a little loose, so you use a button or a clasp like that to hold it together for tzniyus. So therefore, a choymer then is a precious kind of jewel, a precious kind of jewelry. So therefore, Gamliel means that I'm gonna explain this like a precious jewel. Tosfos brings two other explanations. One is that a choymer is a margolis. There's a few other explanations. One is that a choymer means a margolis, which is a diamond or a pearl or something. Another explanation Tosfos says is that it means spices, and then brings from a Gemara in Shabbos where the word chumarta means a bundle of spices. And then they also bring yet another explanation from Sadia Goin that the word in Aramaic for what happened is chamra. So either Reb Sadia would say, and in Reb Sadia's times, people still spoke Aramaic as a living language. So one person would say to another one, ma chamra, as in like, what are you doing? So therefore, the word choymer over here means, I will explain it in accordance with the maise, in accordance with what happened is going to be what Hashem says over here as far as what the korban should be like. Anyway, so Gamliel is saying, I'm going to give a good explanation, a very precious and good explanation of why the sota brings barley flour as a korban. Why is he saying Hanichu li, by the way? What does he mean, leave me alone? Well, and then what, they're not going to allow him to say that? Ben Yehoyada explains that Rav Gamliel himself is going to point out, the Gemara is going to point out, maybe this is, Rav Gamliel is going to explain to the mayor that his explanation of the sota's korban has a couple of flaws in it. So Rav Gamliel is saying, leave me alone to darshan my drasha, and don't try to ask on me the same question. Don't try to ask on me questions like I'm asking on the mayor's. Anyway, what is he darshaning? So what happened was, the shami let a mayor de ka'amah. Rav Gamliel heard the mayor saying that why does the sota's mincha, why is it made of barley flour, is one of those midah keneged midah things that we learned in the previous parak. He had chilatum adane olam, she wanted to get this guy to be mezana with her, she fed him all the kind of delicacies that are in the world in order to attract him to her, l'ficha korbanah ma'ichah behema, therefore midah keneged midah, her korban is brought of animal food. So that was Reb Meir's explanation. But when Gamliel hears Reb Meir say that, he says that doesn't work. Haltenach Ashira, that sure, that would explain in the case of a rich woman, Aniya Ma'ipul Memer. What are you going to say when it comes to a poor woman? A poor woman doesn't necessarily have money to feed her, to feed the boil luxuries. So Ella, rather, the reason must be Kashem Shemaseh, Maisi Behema, just like she acted like an animal, because animals don't stick with their mate. Most animals are promiscuous. Lefricha kach kovana Maisi Behema, the same way her korban is animal food, and that would apply equally well to a poor woman or a rich one. So therefore, Reb Gamliel says that my explanation is preferable. By the way, the Marshal points out that chronologically, it doesn't seem to work. Reb Gamliel is from the same generation as Reb Akiva and Reb Yeshua and the rest of them. He was Reb Meir's Rebbe. So how would he be reacting to what Reb Meir is saying? So rather he says, maybe the Reb Gamliel we mean over here is actually Reb Gamliel is actually Reb Gamliel Bnoi Shel Rebbe. The son of Rebbe, so a couple of generations later, we have him in this week's Pirkei Avos, in Mishnah Beis, Reb Gamliel Bnoi Shel Reb Yehuda Anasi Omer, Yofa Tam Torah and Derech Eretz. So the Marshal says it might be him, or maybe instead of Reb Gamliel, maybe it's supposed to be Reb Shimon Ben Gamliel, who is of the same generation as Reb Meir. The Pashtus, I guess the Marshal would say, in other words, that of course the Rebbe could be reacting to what his Talmud would say, but he wouldn't have to do it in a way like this, where he's saying, Hanichu li, leave me alone, because I have a better explanation. He would just, he would say, you know, your explanation is flawed, and let me get, and here, let me explain to you the correct explanation. So that's what leads him to say that either we're talking about a later Rebbe Gamliel, or that we're talking about Rebbe Shimon Gamliel. The Mishnah says, continuing with the procedure, so now we've talked about the Sota's Mincha, now let's talk about the preparation of the actual May Sota. The Mishnah says, Hoya may be fioli shocheris. The Kohen would bring a fioli of earthenware. A fioli is a cup. There are Mephoshim who explain that specifically the Meiri points out that you have in a number of places in Tanakh, you have the metaphor of a kos shel peronos. You have a number of places where it talks about a cup of punishment that Hashem makes where it often describes when a nation is being punished, then Hashem metaphorically is making them drink a cup of sorrow, a cup of trouble. So in some of those places the Targum translates the word kois with the word fioli, so therefore the Mishnah over here is using that word as well to represent the poronus, to represent the disaster that's going to come on her if in fact she's guilty. So therefore Dafka calls it that. In English, by the way, you have the word vial, V-I-A-L, things like a small, nowadays they use it to mean like a small container for medicine or whatever. It actually derives from this word fioli as well. The word fioli is a Greek word, which eventually came down in English as that word. Anyway, so the Kohen brings a cup shocheres of earthenware, v'noisim osecha chatsi lug mayim min hakir. He puts into it half a lug of water from the kir. So Rashi explains because the pasuk says that he has to bring mayim kedoshim, holy water, and holy means that it was in a kli sharis. The only kli sharis that we generally find that contains water is the kir. So therefore, it has to be brought from the kir. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains, or Rashi explains, that the idea is that the Medrash, I think, explains that the kir was made. We know the kir was made from the mirrors that the women brought. Originally, they used them for their husbands in Mitzrayim, like we learned in the previous parak, and now they made the kir out of it. So therefore, it's a symbol of the fidelity of the Jewish women, how faithful they were to their husbands. Therefore, we have to take water from there to give to the Sota to stress to her how she didn't act like them. Anyway, a lug, depending who you ask, Rav Chaim Noah makes a lug to be about 12 ounces. The Chazon Ish makes it to be about 16. So therefore, a chatsi lug would be somewhere between 6 and 8 ounces about. So he takes that amount of water. Rav Yehud, not a plastic cup.
No, that's
it would be approximately the size of a plastic cup. Yeah, your typical plastic cup is 7 ounces. So yeah, it would be somewhere around there. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, revius. Rabbi Yehuda says it wasn't a half a lug, but a revius, half of that, so 3 or 4 ounces. Because kishem shemamayit b'ksav, just like Rabbi Yehuda holds in the next Mishnah on Daf Yud Zayin, that there's less that is written, pach mamayit b'mayim, so correspondingly he reduces the amount of water. Because the whole point is, why do you need this amount of water? So ultimately it's halacha l'moshe Sinai, but the idea behind it is you want enough water to be able to dissolve the writing into. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, who holds there's less writing, is also going to hold that you need less water. We'll see in the next Mishnah what Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are saying in terms of, we know the Kohen has to write out parts of the Pesukim over there, but Rabbi Yehuda holds that there's certain parts which the Tanakhama holds you have to write, and Rabbi Yehuda says you don't. So that's the war. Now you have a number of ingredients that go into the Meisota. The next ingredient is dirt. The pasuk continues that after it says that the Kohen takes Mayim Kedoshim, holy water, Bikli Cheres, an earthenware container, and an earthenware container, by the way, is also one of those Midah Kenegan Midah things that we learned in the previous parak, when she's giving wine to this guy that she's Mizana yes. with, she gives it in nice fancy glasses, so instead we give it to her in a cheap earthenware cave. So the next thing, the policy continues, is that he should take some of the dirt from the floor of the Mishkan and mix it in. So therefore, so the nichnas lahechol, the kohen goes into the hechol, or funnel yamina, he turns towards his right, umakam hayasham ama al ama. There was a place there in the floor that was distinguishable from the rest of the floor that was an ama by an ama in size. The tablish of shayish, that one ama by one ama space was covered with a with a slab of marble, the tabasos akvuba, and there was a ring attached to that slab. So therefore, krumagdia v'notel off mitachter. So therefore, he could pick up the slab using the ring and take dirt from underneath it. You have to realize, practically speaking, in the Mishkan itself was built. The Mishkan didn't have a floor; it was built on the ground, on the sand, or whatever, wherever it was in the Midbar. So therefore, you didn't need to do any of this. All you need to do is reach down and scoop up some sand. But in the Bais Mikdash, it had a marble floor. Therefore, they had to make this arrangement. They had to put in there this removable tile on the floor to for them to be able to get dirt from underneath. The noisin kadesh yirah alamayim. He has to put enough dirt into the water that it will be noticeable on the surface of the water. Shenema, as the pasuk says, you know, ofra shegiya b'kaka mishkan. From the dirt that is on the floor of the Mishkan, Yikach HaKohen V'Nosan Amoyim, the Kohen should take it and put it into the water. So Rashi explains, since it says El HaMoyim rather than Bamoyim, Bamoyim would just imply there needs to be some dirt in the water, even if it's not noticeable. El HaMoyim implies that it has to be noticeable enough, there should be enough of it that you can notice it on the surface of the water. That shouldn't be nivla, it shouldn't be swallowed, absorbed up in the water. Yeah. So it should be noticeable. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Tana, we learned in a Braisa, Fioli Shocheres Chadosha Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that it has to be a cup of new earthenware that was not used for Malacha. Now Rashi explains that Rabbi Shmuel is arguing with our Mishnah. The Tana of our Mishnah doesn't care about that. He just says it has to be earthenware, new or used. Rabbi Shmuel says Rashi is disagreeing with that and says that it has to be new. On the other hand, the Rambam explains in Pirush HaMishnayos that no, the Rabbi Shmuel is just there, in fact, the Rambam's Girsa also has the word Chadosha in the Mishnah, so therefore he's saying that Rabbi Shmuel is just coming to clarify how we know that it has to be new. So do Rabbi Shmuel. So my time is Rabbi Shmuel, so why does Rabbi Shmuel say it has to be new? The reason is Goma Kli Mimitzorah. He makes a Zera Shava on the word Kli from the Mitzora. And this week's parasha, at the beginning of parasha's Mitzora, when it talks about the whole procedure with the birds and the water and the Eitz Erez and so forth, that has to be done, the first stage of the Tara of the Mitzora, it says, it uses the word Kli over there. It says that they shecht one bird, El Kli Cheres, over an earthenware vessel. And then here also it says Kli, B'Kli Cheres. So therefore, Malahalam, Cheres Chadosha. So just like over there, by Mitzorah, it has to be a new Kali, as we're going to see in a second. How we know that? Afkan, Cheres Chadosha. Therefore, he says the same thing by the Sota, it has to be new.
So far, we're showing that we want everything to be look that not to look nice. New ones looks nice.
Enochanam, but still, the fact is, it doesn't have to, it shouldn't look ugly either. We're going to talk about it in a second. If it's blackened from use, then it's possible. So, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says there is actually an explanation. I don't remember who says this, but that says that similar to the way we find, for example, that when a person was executed by Beis Din, they take the thing that he was executed with, the sword or the stone or whatever, and bury it with him, because you don't want people afterwards to say, look at that, that's the thing that was used to kill Pliny, it would be a degradation for him forever. The same way, we don't want the Kli Cheres that was used for one Soita should be used a different time, and therefore it has to be a new one.
So therefore it has to be new.
No, the point is, in other words, now you use it, it has to be new. You can't use it again for a different Soita. Okay, anyway, so the Hosam and Nolan, so then over there by the Mitzorah, how do you know it has to be new? So Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, V'shochat has tzipor ha'echos el kli cheres al mayim chayim. The Pasuk says that the Koyin shecht, the one bird out of the two, over the kli cheres into mayim chayim, into living water, which means water from a spring. So therefore, we learn that there's a hekesh between the water and the keli. Ma mayim chayim shlanesa behem malacha. Just like mayim chayim means that no malacha has been done with them. So there, couple of ways of explaining why does that imply that no malacha was done with them. So one explanation of the Chazanish gives an explanation, because once malacha was done with them, it's like, so to speak, they're not alive anymore. They don't have a chashivos. They're like something used. So mayim chayim implies they have to have that original chashivos. A different explanation, the Minchas Sota says, chayim implies it comes directly from the spring that it came from. If it was used already, then it's not directly from the spring. Then it like went through something else first.
Interesting. For a mikveh, it's a chesaron, but for this, it's a must.
Yeah. And no, for a mikveh, actually, the other way around. A mikveh can be made from a mayan.
Yeah, but you know, one can use that mikveh. It's what is... We've been replenished the whole time.
No, but if it's moving, that's different. A mikveh has to be still water. That's something else. We're not talking about still versus moving over here. We're talking about the fact is, in the cave, it's not moving. What we mean is though here, this is one of the few cases where the Torah says you have to use spring water. That, the Parah Aduma, a Zov has to dip in a mikveh of spring water. Most of the time, you don't. Most of the time, you can use water that comes from rain or whatever.
Usually spring water is moving.
Yeah, not necessarily. Anyway, so just like so just like living water means that no malacha has been done with it, the same way by the mitzvah, the keli has to not have malacha done with it, and therefore, so in turn, Rabbi Shmuel that is learning a zera shava from there to the sota that it has to be a new keli. But the Gemara asks, "E malahalim mayim chayim afkan mayim chayim." Well, if you're going to learn a zera shava, and then you should say the same way as by the Mitzorda, it has to tackle the Mayim Chayim, water from a spring. The same way you should say over here that it has to be water from a spring. And the fact is it's not, it comes from the Kier. The answer is that Rabbi Shmuel Hochinami. As a matter of fact, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it does have to come from a spring. Because the Amr Rabbi Yechanan may Kier, Rabbi Shmuel Amr may Mayim Hain. Because Rabbi Yechanan says, where does the water from the Kier, for the Kier, come from? Rabbi Shmuel says that it comes from a spring. The Chum says it doesn't. It could be water from anywhere. It could be water from a mikveh. It's brought in other places. You had in the first space mikdash, you had Shloimeh had constructed the Yamashal Shloimeh, a big tank that the Kohenim used as a mikveh. The Yerushalmi actually explains it was a keli. How can you can't use a keli as a mikveh anyhow? The Yerushalmi elsewhere explained that the pasuk says it was standing on top of copper oxen, omid al shnei asavakar, and the feet of those oxen, the legs of those oxen were hollow so that water could flow into them from a mayim. So they had like a system where the water came from a higher level than the mismikdash. It came from Ein Etam, and therefore so it would flow downhill, and then the water pressure would allow it to go up through the legs of the oxen over there and wind up to fill the mikveh. So therefore it was a kosher mikveh, but it was actually attached to a mayan, and the point is then they would use that to fill the kiyor as well in the second mismikdash. They didn't have that. So you have eventually it says that one of the Kohen Gadol built a system where every night the Kiyor would be lowered down into the ground and it would mix, and the water in it would mix with the water of Mayan. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, it has to be that way. You can't fill it with any other water. The Chum say you can fill it with that water from a regular mikveh as well. The point is, yes, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the water in the Kiyor is considered, is in fact spring water. So therefore, yes, he's saying that works with the Gzeira Shava that he's saying. However, the Gemara says, Ikala Mikrach. You can slug up that Tavachon. And Tosfos points out that you have in other places, the Gemara discusses the mechanism Gzeira Shava. Do you have to have that the words on both sides are mufna, or only on one side? Does it have to be that the word that you're using is extra, is not needed for the actual context of the pasuk itself? Here, the fact is, the Torah has to tell us that the Sota and the Mitzota needs a keli, so the words are not necessarily mufna. So you could learn to Gzeira Shava, but you could also shlug it up, as the Gemara is doing over here. You can shlug it up. E mala mitzoda shekain tone eight edas ve'ezer v'shni telas. The fact is, the mitzoda not only requires mayim chayim, he also requires all those other ingredients, where the sota does not. So maybe you should say, therefore, there's a chumra with the mitzoda, that therefore it requires a new keli, which shouldn't necessarily apply to a sota. Why are you saying that the Gzeira Shava tells us that part applies to a sota as well? So the Gemara says, you're right. Omar Rabba. So Rabba says, you're right. We're not learning, Rabbi Shmuel is not learning from Gzeira Shava, but rather Omar Krab Bichli Chores. The pasuk is saying that the kohen should take the water in an earthenware cave. Now, Rabbi explains that means the klisha amauti, means klisha amauti lachokvar, means the type of keli that I already told you about elsewhere. Meaning, in other words, Rabbi says, if the pasuk had said that he should take a kli cheres and put water in it, okay, then it just means exactly that. He needs to take a kli cheres. But when it says that he should put it, the kli cheres, that suggests in a kli cheres, which you already know about from a different mitzvah, that type of kli cheres you should be using for this.
The base, right.
The fact that it says, not so much the base, but the fact that it says, the fact that it's saying that he should put my implosion bichli chores in a kli cheres, suggesting that you already know about this kli cheres from somewhere else. Otherwise, first the Torah should say, take a kli cheres and put water in it. So that means that we're learning that it's the same kind of kli cheres, which is elsewhere. So it's not a zeta shava, it's just that we're learning it by a billion av from Mitzora, and therefore that's valid even though the Mitzora has extra ingredients which the Sota doesn't. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omar Rabba, Loi Shonu Elosh Lonis Ak Mufano. Now this that the Chachamim are saying that you can use that. So first let's talk. Remember we said according to Rashi the Chachamim and Rabbi Shmuel are arguing. Rabbi Shmuel requires a new keli. The Chachamim are not. According to the Rambam and Pirush Mishnayos, we're saying that there's no argument. Everybody agrees it needs to be new. So Rabbi is saying Lo Yishanu Ela Shalanis Ak Muponav. This works only if the keli's surface is not blackened. So according to Rashi, that Chachamim are allowing a used keli, they were saying fine, it can be used, but not if it was blackened by using it in fire or something. According to the Rambam, that it has to be new. According to everybody, he would say that it means it shouldn't look like it's old and worn out. You could have a keli that's physically new, but it hasn't been used for a long time and it got dusty and dirty. Then Rava is saying that's also no good. It has to actually look new. But if its surface is blackened, psulin, then it's possible. My timer, now why is that? Dumya demine, because again, we have to compare, the keli has to be similar to the water. It's true though, Rashi says, we're not learning the Zeta Shava from Mitzora anymore. However, within the Sota itself, we're saying that the keli has to be similar to the water. And even the Chachamim who say that it doesn't have to be spring water, but still, ma'mayim shalanishtanu, just like the water can't have been changed in color, it can't be discolored water, after shalanishtana, the same way the keli has to be something that didn't change, that doesn't look black, so it looks new. Now, Tosfos points out that, one second, the kiyor, if you're saying you're taking water from the kiyor, the water of the kiyor was used. The fact is, the kohenim use it every day to wash their hands and feet. But nevertheless, each day, not like they're, when they're doing the soto, earlier that day, the kohenim were makadosh yadayim raglayim from that, after it was already taken out of the...
Well, come here, it doesn't go back in.
Tosfos mentions the point that the kohenim pour the water out of the faucets of it. So Maushal explains, in other words, so Maushal deals with it, and Maushal deals with it, the fact is, we know the Kohenim didn't wash inside the kiyor. The Maushal understands Tosfos to be saying, he fixes up the girsa a little bit in Tosfos. Maushal says it's not really necessary. What we're saying is, so Maushal is explaining, in other words, that Tosfos is saying the fact is the Kohenim don't wash from the inside of the kiyor. They wash only by opening up the faucet. So therefore there's no problem with the water that remains in the kiyor. Maushal says a little bit different. The fact is even if b'dieved, if a person were to do kiddush adayim ravayim inside the kiyor, b'dieved it would be valid. Nevertheless, Tosfos goes on to say that kind of thing is not considered malacha. Malacha would be, for example, if he washed dishes with the water, but not, for example, if he washed his hands and feet with it. Anyway, the water didn't have malacha done with it. Tosfos on the other hand asks, the fact is, we know, for example, that a mikveh, the water can change color, and it's still kosher, as long as it didn't change because of something that was poured into it. Right. In Mishnayos, and in Yesh Malamus HaMikveh, yeah, you have that topic. If it just changed on its own, for example, because it got mixed in with mud from the hole that it was in, or whatever, then it's still kosher. So why over here should it tackle be that it has to be the same color? So Tosfos says, in fact, you're right, this din would be only d'rabbanan. M'daraisa, there might not be a problem, but m'daraisa, we don't want the keli or the water to be changed color. So boy rabba, nis'akmu v'achzirun, osech kivshan esh nis'labnu, what would happen if the keli did become black, but then you put it back into the kiln to refire it, and now it got cleaned up, and now it looks nice, and now it looks nice and light colored again. Mahu, what would be the din? Is the keli kosher to use for the soita? Do we say once the keli was pushed off and it can't be used anymore, then it's pushed off and it can never be used again? Or maybe not. Once it came back to be like it was originally, the same color as it was originally, then it would be kosher after all.
It's like a new
keli. In that sense, it's almost like a new keli, right. So the Gemara says Toshma, Rabbi Lozer Omer, Eitz Eres Ve'ezer V'Shnitelas Shehifshul Ben Kuposel Achorav. Again, we have by the Mitzora and also by the Paradroma and a couple of other things where you need Eitz Eres and Ezer and Shnitelas. Where, so Rabbi Lozer says, suppose that you use them to carry a basket behind you. So you use them as like a handle for the basket. You took a piece of Eitz Eres and use it as a handle for a basket or a piece of, or you use a branch of Ezer or whatever for that purpose. So he says that psulin, so those would be possible to use for the mitzora or for the, those would be possible for use for the mitzora or for the paradoma. So now the Gemara asks, why would they be possible just because of that? Vaha hasam hadri umapshadi. After all, once you finish using them, they straighten back out. So you use them, they bend while you're using them, but afterwards you can straighten them back out. Once they become posel, then they can never become kosher again. So the same thing should apply over here. The Gemara says that's not a proof. Because you could say they were talking about where the piece of erez or whatever was actually peeled off. The bark was peeled off as a result of using it, and therefore that's a shinui that never comes back. But on the other hand, here, if it was, let's say, just that it got bent and then straightened out, maybe it would be kosher. And the same thing over here. Maybe it would be kosher when it's put back into the furnace and refired. The Rambam ends up paskening that it is kosher in that case. The Kesef Mishnah wonders why. The Gemara left it over here as a suffix. So he says maybe because after all, if we say, like Rashi does, and not like the Rambam himself says in Pirush HaMishnayis, that the Chachamim are in fact arguing with Rabbi Shmuel, then at least we should try not to make the Machlokes so different. If Rabbi Shmuel is saying it needs to be absolutely new, then we should say the Chachamim are going to allow it at least as long as it looks new. As long as it looks new is good enough. The Mishnah Melech there gives a different answer. He says, given that Tosfos is saying over here, this whole psul of a keli that's black is only a d'rabbanan, well, then it's a suffix d'rabbanan, so therefore you can be made. The Mishnah had said, nichnas lahechol funnily minhechola. The kohen goes into the hechol and turns to his right. So why dafka to his right? My time, a drama mouth called pinis shatapona lo yu el derech yimin. Because we learn in a few other places in Shas that all turns that you make should be only to the right for the same reason the Kohen going around the Mizbeach keeps going to his right, and you have a number of other examples of that. So therefore, you should be turning to his right in the Heichol.
I would think that because she turns to the left, that's what we hear.
No, it doesn't mean that. No, it doesn't say anything like that. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and talk about the actual dirt itself, what kind of dirt you can use, and what kind of substitutes for dirt would also be acceptable.